Well, for perspective now, we turn to Alan Ayer. He served in the U.S. government for 4 decades and was part of the Obama administration's negotiating team for the Iran nuclear deal, which President Trump pulled out of back in 2018. He's now at the Middle East Institute. And Miad Maliki was born and raised in Iran. Until last year, he was associate director for sanction targeting with a focus on Iran in the U.S. Treasury Department. He's now a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Thank you both for being here. Alan, we'll start with you. I think it might be helpful for our viewers to sort of reset the table. Help us understand what exactly has been agreed to and by whom.
Well, I think what's been agreed to is ceasefire for 2 weeks. And on the one hand, U.S. and Israel have to obey. On the other hand, Iran. It's not clear whether this extends to Israel stopping attacks in Lebanon, which is one of the 10 points that Israel had in its proposal. Unclear. But to me, the key unknown variable is how much does Iran let loose of its chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz, which has become the single most important piece of strategic leverage it has. I'm frankly surprised that they agreed to this ceasefire. And 2 weeks from now, we'll see whether they're willing to relinquish it in perpetuity, which I would be surprised at.
How realistic is this in the short term, do you think, Iran reopening the strait?
I think it is. I would disagree I would argue that they needed a ceasefire more than any other party to this conflict. I mean, their economy is bankrupt. They rely on the Strait of Hormuz more than any other nations in the Gulf. So I think they wanted a ceasefire. I'm not surprised that they agreed to some sort of ceasefire. We don't know what those 10 points are. We've seen some reports that some of those 10 points are things that I don't think the U.S. government is going to agree to, such as sanctions relief or some kind of a provision of financial kind of incentives to Iran for the flow of commerce through the Strait of Hormuz. It could be some watered down version of the 10 points. It could be a new set of 10 points that Iran proposed. So we have to wait and see what those 10 points are. But at this point, again, I think the Iranian regime is coming out of this in a lose-lose kind of situation. They accept the ceasefire. They have to accept the reality of the domestic pressure, a broken economy, and a political situation that is very dire. They've lost their top layers of leadership, and it's unclear if they can actually communicate between different provinces with different parts of government. And if they did not accept the ceasefire, then they're going to keep losing militarily and politically and economically.
And Alan, in the Truth Social post from President Trump this evening, he says, "We have already met and exceeded all military objectives." What were those objectives, and is his assessment widely shared?
Before I answer that, I'd like to point out one thing, and I could be wrong, but Iran's ships were still going through the Straits of Hormuz, so they were still making money. They were controlling the flow of traffic, but not stopping all of it. So economically, they weren't suffering that much. They were, in fact, making more. And your question was?
When the president says we have already met and exceeded our military objectives.
He has. I mean, Israel and the U.S. have both said repeatedly, our goal was to deny Iran the ability to project power past its borders. They've done that. They've taken out the Navy. They've taken out the Air Force. They've hurt much of Iran's defense industrial base, destroyed many of the petrochemical plants that made precursors essential for rocket fuel, missile fuel, taken out the nuclear centers. But what they didn't do, the unintended consequence is they allowed Iran to discover a new strategic lever, and that's control of the strait. So in many ways, control of the strait has supplanted the latent threat of Iran going nuclear in terms of a possible future strategic deterrent.
And the military might in and of itself isn't enough leverage to ensure that the strait stays open?
Who's about the Western military might?
Yes.
No, it's not, because it takes relatively little to close the straits. All you have to do is spook the insurance market, and that's, a fast attack craft and a guy holding an RPG, right? It doesn't take a massive navy to threaten the Strait of Hormuz to hit a ship. So that's the problem. All it takes is a couple of drones, which are cheap to make. Iran has lots of them. Or even worse, as I said, someone in a fast attack craft, and you've so cowed the international insurance markets that they're not going to provide insurance, without which ships won't go through the strait.
Mia, do you see a framework here for a lasting peace, something more durable?
I don't think you can see that with this regime. And just kind of responding very quickly to your point, there's some limited number of tankers, Iranian tankers, that move through the Strait of Hormuz. But the fact is, Iranian regime cannot repatriate any of this revenue that it generates from oil. It's unclear if the oil that moves outside the Strait of Hormuz is actually being picked up by buyers. There's now Venezuela oil in the market. There's more Russian oil that is now available to some of the buyers, given some of the relief that was provided recently. So back to your question, I think it's with this regime, a lasting peace or agreement is just not, you're not going to see that. I think they're, especially given the fact that they're domestically under so much pressure, they're going to have to look for some kind of another conflict. If you go back historically, you know, in the 80s, Iran-Iraq war gave Iranian regime some kind of a few years of relief domestically to kind of operate in that state of war. They have that right now with the ending of the strikes and the campaign. They're going to have to face the reality that domestically they're not really considered legitimate by the people. They don't have the support domestically. We can see how another round of protests in Iran and the regime might go back to posing threat to external adversaries.
Well, to your point, as I understand it, the last line of the Iranian statement reads, "Our hand remains upon the trigger," which you would interpret in what way?
I think they're going to maintain control over the Strait of Hormuz. They've had this for years. That's not going to change. They're not going to agree to any kind of deal that would push them away from what they're able to do in the Strait of Hormuz. But as I said, their import relies on the Strait of Hormuz. Their export, getting oil out, depends on the Strait of Hormuz, regardless of if they can sell the oil or not. They have to get the oil out so they can continue to extract oil. Yeah. So they really depend on the Strait of Hormuz. They're going to continue to pose that threat.
And Alan, what fault lines remain at this point?
Well, the fact that both sides' minimal demands of the other are so far apart that it will take serious and sustained negotiations for any sort of chance of a solution. And this is not something the U.S. has really done, this administration, before. They have a type of strategic attention deficit disorder. They want to move on to something else. So I just hope that they dedicate the people, the expertise, and the time. There was a recent story in the press that said that Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner told President Trump, in essence, yeah, we could probably reach a deal, but it would take a few months. Well, that's great. Let's dedicate those few months and get a deal.
And lastly, what do you make of Pakistan's role in all of this? Why have they emerged as the key mediator?
Well, there were seven countries trying to mediate. There was Pakistan, Egypt, Turkey, Qatar, and Oman. That's five, sorry. They did a great job. I mean, to a large extent, any country that has the minimal mutual relations with the U.S. and Iran would suffice. Pakistan did the job. I mean, what matters is partly who's mediating, but more importantly, the message is being passed, not the tube they're being passed in. So I commend Pakistan for doing a great job. But the key roles are not going to be whoever mediates. And ideally, I'd like no mediation. I'd like both sides talking to each other. That's what we did at the JCPOA, not 2 or 3 hours every couple of weeks, all day, every day, until you reach an agreement.
Alan Ayer, Miad Maliki, thank you both for your insights and perspectives.
Thank you.